hospitality, a place at the table. When I was a stranger, you took me in. All of these words resonate with many, perhaps most, Americans. Yet a Congress that professes to be steeped in Christian morality, not that I'm saying that's a good thing, can't seem to manage to act on one of the most fundamental expressions of all of these values, immigration reform. And so an estimated 11 million people head into this holiday season with no more security than they felt last year at this same time, despite progress in the United States Senate. I'm joined now by Dr. Miguel de la Torre, professor of social ethics and Latino studies, a public speaker, prolific writer, and author of numerous books, the latest of which is Liberation Theology for Armchair Theologians. Miguel, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
I am so glad to be with you, mainly because the greatest human rights violation that is occurring in the United States today is occurring in our borders.
You put it right on the table up front. And so it's Thanksgiving weekend, but still there's no place at the table for so many who consider this country to be their home. Miguel, what in the world is it going to take?
It has taken over a century to get into the mess we are in now. It may take another century to fix it. Our immigration problem did not just occur yesterday. It began with our foreign policy in Latin America, known as gunboat diplomacy, in the turn of the last century. And our economic policies, i.e. NAFTA, that is pushing thousands upon thousands, if not millions upon millions of people out of their countries towards the United States.
In public opinion, that people listen to our members of Congress talking about religion, speaking about their faith, but diverse faith leaders, business leaders, and others are all supporting reform, but these politicians seem not to be listening. Is that the way you see it?
Well, I think many of the politicians are afraid that if these immigrants become citizens, they may be voting more liberal and more socially conscious. Mm-hmm. So there's a fear of the changing demographics in this nation and the power that comes with these new demographics voting. So for many of these politicians, no, they do not want to bring about change. Plus, many of the laws that have been passed has been funded by private prison corporations that are making billions of dollars by making sure that we have a broken immigration system in where immigrants go to jail.
I want you to say a little more about that, because you're bringing up something that doesn't usually get pointed to in this discussion. And if I am hearing you right, there is a profit motive for these private prisons involved here.
Absolutely. The major private corporations that are prisons charged the government, back in 2009, they were charging the government like $112 per prisoner per day, while their cost to maintain a prisoner was like $24, $25. So the profit margin is very high, and because the undocumented do not have the same prison rights or the same rights as U.S. citizens, there's no oversight. So there's tremendous abuses going on, but it is very profitable. So it's not surprising that these same prison companies are spending money in campaign contributions and in writing laws that create things like Operation Streamline, which is a judicial process that ensures that the undocumented, when caught, actually goes to prison.
Yeah.
So it's a profit-making operation in where, of course, the undocumented is the ones who are suffering the most.
Miguel, how do you think we ought to relate to legislators? I just mentioned that so many of these people identify themselves as people of faith, and they speak religious language. I don't know how they can justify inaction for themselves and how they justify it to their constituents. What's the best way to call their hand on it?
That's a good question. And we need to be careful of religious language, because many times we use the language of hospitality, that as good Christians, we should be hospitable to these strangers. But the problem with hospitality is that it assumes I own the house, and out of the goodness of my heart, I'm going to let you live in my house.
Mm.
The reality is that the reason we have an immigration problem today is because for a century, we conducted regime change throughout Central America and the Caribbean, overturning governments to a tune of 46 regime change in the last century. In order to protect U.S. business of having the goods, services, flow towards the United States. Add to that the recent NAFTA agreement, in where, for example, we spent $41.9 billion in subsidizing crops and corn in the first 10 years of NAFTA, meaning that farmers could no longer compete against corn. It was cheaper to buy U.S. corn than to grow it, forcing close to 1.7 million farmers losing their farms due to NAFTA. So you have this massive push of immigrants out of their former home because of our trade policies and because of the wars and violence that we've created in Latin America. So the real question is, when one country builds roads into another country to extract their raw material and their cheap labor, why should we be surprised that those same people take those same roads following everything that has been stolen from them?
Mm.
So the question is no longer hospitality. It is their cheap resources and labors that built the house. So maybe we should be talking about restitution. But that's a conversation politicians and many Americans are not willing to have.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe in human terms the toll that this takes on families and communities, and especially during this holiday season?
Let me give you the example of Jocelyn. Jocelyn is a 12-year-old girl who her mother came to the United States, and after many years, she went ahead and decided to follow her mother. On her way here, she had a sprained ankle while crossing the desert. That's a death sentence. The organization I work with, No More Deaths, found her body. She died of thirst and hunger in the desert. The toll in human life is tens of thousands of people who are literally disappearing on the borders. Little girls like Jocelyn. And here's the moral question. In the richest country the world has ever known, we have a 12-year-old girl dying of thirst. There is something morally wrong with that picture.
Absolutely. It is. I mean, I have to ask, do you think that members of Congress are aware of those kinds of tragic stories?
Absolutely. We always have this thing about you need to speak truth to power.
Right.
I believe power already knows the truth. Hmm. They have the GAO studies. They have the Border Patrol studies. They know what's going on. What we need to do is speak truth to the powerless, to hold those with power in Congress accountable to the rhetoric that they seem to be claiming that we're a nation that welcomes immigrants and that we have open arms.
Miguel, I should tell you that my graduate studies were in ethics, so I have a great appreciation for your work in ethics. And just from the perspective of an ethicist as well as a great human being, how can we realign our public policies with what we at least confess to be our private values?
That's a very difficult question, because once we begin to do that, that means we begin to change how power structures operate. And those who are being privileged by our present power structures are not willing to give up that power. So we see all kinds of shenanigans going on, like voter ID, and to disenfranchise many of the voters. Sometimes probably the only thing that we can do is to mess with the system, to actually begin to protest the inhumanity, the human rights violations that are going on at the border. Not since the days of Jim Crow do we have policies on the books that deter one group of people through the usage of death and the desert to prevent the same group of people from doing the same thing. That's unacceptable, and immoral at the very least.
I'm intrigued by the title of your new book, Liberation Theology for Armchair Theologians. Haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I wish you would talk about the idea behind that book.
Well, basically the book was written to individuals who may not know much about liberation theology. So it does the historical background. But then what I try to do is I move beyond just Christianity and show liberation theology and how it operates among people who are Buddhist, among people who are Jewish, who are Muslims, who are Hindu, and who are humanists.
Mm-hmm.
And how by us all working towards social justice, what all of our different faith traditions calls us to do, we can become ecumenical. We can actually have conversation without giving up the tenets of our individual faith.
Right.
And quite frankly, I really believe that the greatest threat to humanity today is the globalization of the economy, also known as neoliberalism.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that could stand against this oppressive structure are the faith traditions of the people who really believe in the calling of standing in solidarity with the very least of these.
Yeah. So you already are headed in that direction. Say a little more about the role that liberation theology plays in dealing with today's social justice issues, both in this country and beyond.
Well, the basic tenet of liberation theology is to stand with the oppressed, to stand with the poor, to stand with the hungry and the thirsty and the naked. When we do that, we then have new eyes by which to understand how the divine operates in our lives and within our world. So what liberation theology does for me and for many other individuals is that it brings our faith alive, because our faith truly comes alive when we do our faith rather than just believe in it or talk about it. It's a radical understanding of Christianity that, in my opinion, just brings it alive. So that's what excites me about it, and I think that's one of the reasons why I've written these type of books.
I think it'd be safe to say that if you sit down in an armchair to read liberation theology, pretty soon you've got to get up.
It's funny you say that, because the very last paragraph of the book, you know, of spoiler alert, is asking the reader that it's time to put down the book and literally get out of your armchair, because if you don't, then you know nothing about liberation theology. Which, going back to immigration, I would double dog dare your readers to come down to the border for themselves,
mm-hmm.
to come feed the hungry, come give water to the thirsty, come clothe the naked. And if they see for themselves the human rights violations that are occurring there, it would evangelize, it would spiritualize, it would revolutionize their entire faith.
What a great challenge. Dr. Miguel Della Torre is professor of social ethics and Latino studies in Denver, Colorado. His latest book is Liberation Theology for Armchair Theologians. Miguel, I am so glad that you are helping educate and train ministers for the next generation. You are so right on. And thank you for taking time to be with us today on State of Belief Radio.
And thank you very much, and thank you for the work you're doing on this radio station.